ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 2, Hiranyakashipu, King of Demons, 35th text. Evam vilapatinam vai. Evam vilapatinam vai. Parigrihyam ritam patim. Parigrihyam ritam patim. Anichatinam nirharam. Anichatinam nirharam. Arkustam sanya vartata. Arkustam sanya vartata. Evam vilapatinam vai. Parigrihyam ritam patim. Anichatinam nirharam. Arkustam sanya vartata. Please. Evam, thus, vilapatinam of the lamenting queens. Vai, indeed, parigrihya, taking on their laps. Mritam, the dead. Patim, husband. Anichatinam, not desiring. Nirharam, the carrying out of the body for the funeral ceremony. Arka, the sun. Astam, the sitting position. Sanyavartata, passed away. Translation and purport of His Divine Grace is see Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada ki. The time was appropriate for the body to be burned, but the queens, not allowing it to be taken away, continued lamenting for the dead body, which they kept on their laps. In the meantime, the sun completed its movements for setting in the west. Purport. According to the Vedic system, if a person dies during the daytime, it is customary for his funeral ceremony to be performed before the sun sets, regardless of whether he is burned or buried. And if he dies at night, the funeral must be completed before the next sunrise. Apparently, queens continued lamenting for the dead body, the lump of matter, and would not allow it to be taken away for burning. This illustrates the strong grip of illusion among foolish persons who consider the body the self. Women are generally considered less intelligent, and because of ignorance only, the queens thought of the dead body as their husband, and somehow or other thought that if the body were kept, their husband would remain with them. Such a conception of self is certainly for gokara, cows and asses. We have actually seen that sometimes when a cow's calf has died, the milkman cheats the cow by presenting before her the dead body of her calf. Thus the cow, who would not otherwise allow milking, licks the dead body of the calf and allows herself to be milked. This substantiates the description of the Shastra that a foolish man and the bodily concept of life is like a cow. Not only do foolish men and women consider the body the self, but we have even seen that the dead body of the so-called yogi was kept for days by his disciples who thought that their guru was in samadhi. When decomposition began and bad smell unfortunately began to overwhelm the yogic power, the disciples allowed the dead body for the so-called yogi to be burned. Thus, the bodily concept of life is extremely strong among foolish persons who are compared to cows and asses. Nowadays, great scientists are trying to freeze dead bodies so that in the future these frozen bodies may again be brought to life. The incident narrated by Hiranyakashipu from history must have taken place millions of years ago, because Hiranyakashipu lived millions of years ago and was even then quoting from history. Thus, the incident occurred before Hiranyakashipu's lifetime, but the same ignorance in the bodily concept of life is still prevalent, not only among laymen, but even among scientists who think they will be able to revive frozen corpses. Apparently, the queens did not want to deliver the dead body for burning because they were afraid of dying with the dead body of their husband. Evam vilapitanam vai parigrihya mritam patim anichatinam nirharam arkustam sanyavartata. The time was appropriate for the body to be burned, but the queens, not allowing it to be taken away, continued lamenting for the dead body, because which they kept on their laps. In the meantime, the sun completed its movements for the setting in the west. Yes. So we are continuing reading the one of the most favorite stories. Srila Prabhupada liked the story of Prahlad Maharaj, his demoniac father, Hiranyakashipu. And it's one of the amazing stories throughout all the Srimad Bhagavatam. Actually, it very nicely describes, and even for me personally reminds the... You can say demoniac times. Devotees sometimes are put into situations like. So, from my own experience, I remember how back in 1970s, when actually I was presented right on the street, approached by devotees who said, "We heard you are interested in yoga, so here it is, the object for meditation." They gave me a piece of paper with a Maha Mantra written on it, and they gave me teeny beads to chant. And they said, "This Maha Mantra, this mantra, you have to chant for 2 hours in a row on these beads." So I objected. I said, "Come on. I'm trying to meditate and can't control my mind, fix my mind for 5 minutes, and you tell me 2 hours chant. 2 hours meditate. It's impossible. What are you telling me?" I said, okay, just take it and chant. And these were quite tough times for us because we were afraid of the religion was banned and persecuted, and I thought if KGB will find these beads and this mantra with me, I may end up in trouble. So first thing I thought, okay, let me learn by heart this Maha Mantra, because I never before, it's in 1979, back in 1979, I never before have heard of Krishna, Maha Mantra. I had a concept that there are some type, some kind of mantras, but this Maha Mantra is something to be big. I learned right away it by heart and thought, anyway, if I lose this paper was written Maha Mantra, or it may be confiscated or whatever, still in my heart I'll keep this Maha Mantra. Nobody can steal it from my heart. So from time to time I was reminding myself, so what is this mantra? Okay, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And I was happy. I was thinking, okay, if in lifetime I will need it, I have it in my heart and I could start chanting. So it didn't took long. I don't know. We didn't actually, those years, we didn't had no books, no temples, no ashrams, no gurus, no philosophy, nothing, nothing. And no association, because we couldn't really come together, chant, discuss like we have now. But chanting of the holy name of Maha Mantra kept us spiritually alive, because there was nothing else to rely on. There was nothing else to take shelter of than mantra and chanting japa. So in 1981, the first books of Prabhupada started appearing, and when I got Bhagavad Gita, which was actually very funny, it was not actually a book, it was printed sheets. I remember I actually paid all my salary, which was, of course, not big, but still it was one month salary, to get a printed sheets of Bhagavad Gita. It was not folded, it was not bound, it had no cover, but we were so eager to know about what is this Krishna all about? What is this Maha Mantra all about? So I just swallowed. I read this Bhagavad Gita, which looked very funny. One page is on this side, another on this, another on this, another on this. And you know, when you fold and cut it, then it makes a book. But when it's printed on sheets, it's funny to read. But it doesn't matter. People were so eager and keen to read Bhagavad Gita, to get transcendental knowledge, that they didn't mind reading anyway. So, and when we read the story of Prahlad Maharaj, when we read the story Hiranyakashipu persecuted his own son trying to kill him, it reminds like this, that Prahlad Maharaj even dared to preach to his schoolmates. Woo! Those years, we didn't dare to tell and preach to anyone else. My parents were very surprised when I was getting up before the school at 5, 6 o'clock in the morning, going to the kitchen, in a small apartment, going to the kitchen to chant my rounds. They were wondering what our son is doing, what's wrong with him. Everyone tries to sleep as long as possible, and even up to being late to the school. This boy gets up so early in the morning, chants, murmurs something in the kitchen when the rest of the family is sleeping. So, but it was so sheltering. Chanting of the holy name was so sheltering that whomever came in contact with holy names of the Lord immediately felt peaceful. And then some years later, when devotees secretly arranged for the Namahato program in the cellar under the house to come together, to chant together kirtan, I remember next day my head was ringing with the kirtan sounds. It was so impressive. Such a simple thing. Young people came together to chant some ununderstandable words and understandable mantras, but it has such a deep influence and power that, you know, the next day your head is full of these songs and melodies and chanting. So actually, this story of Prahlad Maharaj, of his demoniac father, is most amazing story, because the intrigue has been disclosed in the previous chapter, in the first chapter of seventh canto, where actually Prahlad Parikshit Maharaj asked the question, Shukadeva Goswami, about is it really Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Shri Krishna or Vishnu, is impartial to anyone? Because he says that actually when Lord, when Yudhishthira, Maharaj Yudhishthira was performing Rajasuya sacrifice, and Shishupal was killed by Lord Krishna, everyone could see that his soul entered Lord Krishna's body and got liberation. So everyone were so much surprised, thinking, how is it possible? How is it possible that such a demon blasphemer of the Supreme Personality of God had got liberation? How is it possible? And another contradiction seemed disturbing the mind of Maharaj Yudhishthira was that King Vena, who was also demoniac person, actually was cursed by the brahmanas and sent to hell. So where is how to figure it out, who is meant to go back home, back to Godhead or whatever, go get the liberation, and who is meant to get to hell? Because the same blame put forward, and Hiranyakashipu, he said, my brother, my dear most best amongst the best, Hiranyaksha, was killed by the Vishnu. I'll cut his head off. Hiranyaksha was blaming the Lord. Why he's parting with demigods? Why this Vishnu is partial to the demigods? What is going on? And he preaches. It's amazing thing. Amazing thing to read how such a demon, Hiranyakashipu, preaches, you can practically say, perfect philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Preaching to his relatives, to the wives of Hiranyaksha, quoting the story of Yamaraj, that the soul is eternal, the body is temporary, there is no need for lamenting for the dead body. By lamentation, you are not able to bring it back to life, and like that. Like Ravana, he knew Vedas perfectly. Like computer, he could cite any shloka from any part of the world right away. Just tell him, ask him whatever he could cite. But, so what makes that person who knows Veda so well, what makes him demon? Yes, and I searched in Bhagavad Gita where Lord Krishna speaks about this in quite few shlokas. Quite few shlokas saying that abhyasuyati, this enmity, enviousness. Actually, enviousness. Krishna says to Arjuna that those envious demons, those envious persons from life after life, I'm sending them to lower planetary systems, to lower species of life, because of being envious. So we see, be that Ravana, be that Hiranyakashipu, doesn't matter that they know the Vedic literature so well, but they consider Supreme Personality of Godhead the enemy. And yes, there is one amazing shloka in previous chapter told by Narada Muni to Maharaj Yudhishthir. Just listen what he says. Narada Muni said that by devotional service, one cannot achieve such intense absorption in thought of Supreme Personality of Godhead as one can through enmity towards Him. Oops. By devotional service, you cannot so intensely absorb in meditation on the Supreme Personality of Godhead as through enmity towards Him. And Narada Muni says, this is my opinion. So this is explanation that actually those demons who in previous lifetime they were Jayan Vijayan were cursed by four Kumaras, cursed to become demons. Actually, they had deepest meditation on the Lord, be that Kamsa, was constantly fearing to be killed. We see that a bodily concept of life grants you with what? With fear to be killed, with fear to your body be annihilated. Even today we read that the mercy showering from the sky, that the wives of Hiranyaksha even were not willing to bury the husband from one point of view, yes, being sorry for his death, but from another point of view, Srila Prabhupada disclosed, they were afraid themselves to be buried along with their husband and die. Because if you attach to the body of your husband, sure, you are attached to your own body, because the body of a husband was giving a pleasure and sense gratification. So you don't want to lose. You are sorry for losing the sense gratification, opportunity for sense gratification. And this is deep illusion. This is deep illusion. And when Yamaraj came to preach in the form of, later on in this chapter, is given this example by Hiranyakashipu, came in the form of a young boy. He was preaching to the relative, saying that actually I am younger than you. And I understand that it is stupid to lament for the dead, because by your lamentation, surely you're not going to revive back to life this dead body. So what's the use? What's the use for crying? What's the use for lamenting? Because you're not going to revive him. So just give it up. Give it up, this wrong concept. Similar philosophy was preached by Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. Well, he's explaining to Arjuna why he should perform his prescribed duties. And he took the position of both points of view, spiritual point of view and materialistic point of view, saying that, Arjuna, I just explained to you, although you speak wise words, but you act like a fool. You're going to give up your prescribed duties and you don't know your destination. I tell you, your destination is going to hell, because the one who is giving up his prescribed duties is going to hell. But I explain you that from the spiritual point of view, that the spirit is eternal. You can't kill him. You can't burn, cut into pieces. It's eternal. So by killing a person, nobody you are killing. It's just this body has been finished. And the real personality, Satchitananda Vigraha, the spirit soul, stays alive eternally. Okay. If you are not keen to accept the spiritual point of view, okay. Let's go to the materialistic point of view. Before the person took birth, he is made of different cells, panchamahabhuta, earth, water, fire, air, ether. So he is made out of these elements, and those elements were spread in the nature. And when the person is formated into the human being, those elements come together in some particular proportions. When the person dies, those elements come back to their own abodes. Earth to earth, water to water, fire to fire. So where is the reason for lamentation? So he says that this lamentation is of tamasic nature, is of ignorance. So don't be fooled, don't let yourself get conquered by this foolish lamentation. It leads to nowhere. It leads to nowhere. So those examples is very good lesson to all of us. It's a very good lesson to all of us, because why we are reading Bhagavatam, why we are reading Gita every day? In order to live by that. In order to live accordingly. Otherwise, like Arjuna showed this example, he, in the first chapter of Gita, he gave such a nice reasons not to fight, not to perform duty. Such nice philosophy. But acted in a wrong way. So it is said that you can judge the person by the way he acts. He may speak wonderful words. He may speak wonderful philosophy. And we see Hiranyakashipu, Kamsa, Ravana. They were expert politicians, they were expert diplomats, they were expert philosophers. And we see nowadays people get high educations, diplomas, one, another, third, so many. Why? Just to be expert, how to excuse themselves from the sinful activities. They are so smart. Yeah. Nowadays everything becomes smart. Smartphones, smart cars, smart whatever, I don't know. In New Vrindavan I saw a box of toilet paper, it was said smart. What does that mean? I don't know. It's a fashion. Everything becomes smart. So be smart to excuse yourself from the sinful activities. Do whatever you like. But if you are smart enough to explain it is not sinful, then it is not sinful. So what's the use of this education? What's the use of high philosophy if my character is of Hiranyakashipu? If I am envious, abhyasuyati, envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If I don't took temple, sure, because of deep somewhere, anartha sitting, enviousness. Be that envious towards devotees, be that towards Personality of Godhead, being towards Prabhupada, we see. So many bogus philosophies being put forward. Screwed or whatever. So this philosophy meant to create a wonderful character in every of the devotee who is like a touchstone, valuable and pleasing to associate with. So therefore I'm very grateful to all of you giving me opportunity to get your association, giving me opportunity to share my simple realizations with you. And I pray that I could remain as a servant at the lotus feet of the Vaishnava devotees. Grantarachi Madhbhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Harinam Sankirtan ki, Gaur Premanande. Do you have some questions? Objections? Yes, please.
You're describing how when you first joined, all you had was the Maha Mantra. There was no books, no temples, nothing. It was just you're introduced to the Maha Mantra.
Yes.
So I was just wondering, and that was all you were taking shelter of. But I might have missed this detail, but I was just wondering, did you say something about how was it that you were able to have such faith in the chanting? Was it that you were experiencing, you know, some really higher taste, or did the person who introduced you to the mantra, did they just present it in such a convincing way that you just became convinced of the importance of it, or a combination of both? It's because it seems to me like it's amazing that just, you know, with no philosophy, no temples, no anything, no association, that you're able to just be so attached and, you know, become so surrendered to just the chanting.
Thank you so much. Actually, even I don't need to reply myself. That's why I told that this previous chapter of Bhagavatam is so amazing, where Narada Muni replies to your question. In first chapter, text number 30, saying, Kamadvi shad bhayat snehat yata bhakti shvarimana avesha tadaham hitva bhavas tadgatim gata. He gives us different reasons why a person, pious person, is absorbed in thoughts of Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. He says that many persons have attained liberation simply by thinking of Krishna with great attention and giving up sinful activities. This great attention, absorption, may be due to, he says, lusty desires, inimical feelings towards the Lord, fear, affection or devotional service. I shall now explain how one receives Krishna's mercy simply by concentrating one's mind upon him. So he gives all the philosophy that doesn't matter how you absorb your thoughts in Krishna, be that inimical, be that even lusty desires. But in our case, most probably, I would say, because of fear. The situation was so violent, you could say, and emotionally and intellectually violent in those years in this country, in that country, that people were feared so much of even thinking bad about government, about the rulership, about the political situation, and being afraid of going to the churches because you could be kicked out of your job or school or university. So everyone was very, very, very fearful. So, and it's natural for the conditioned soul still look for the shelter. Maybe in some rich country, people take shelter of money, of houses, I don't know, of businesses or whatever. They take shelter. They invest their energy, life force into that. But when you don't have opportunities, so there's a need for the having shelter somewhere. So if you are at least a little bit pious, you are looking for some sattvic shelter. Yes?
You might have said this right, I might have missed it, but who told you about the chanting? So you were like, I imagine, a student or something. How did you come in contact?
Actually, I was already doing yoga myself, interested in yoga. So devotees somewhere figured out that this boy is interested in yoga, let him approach and direct him on the right path. So right on the street, they caught me. One lady, actually, she is now living in North Carolina in devotee community. She approached me and said, here is the mantra, here is the bead bag, here is the beads. The beads were size of a buckwheat seed, very sharp and very small. They were cut by knife and were not round. They were like cornered. So by chanting, your finger becomes red and painful. And, you know, 16 rounds, man, the blood could start going from the finger. But still, you know, changing the place to roll your... So they gave me on the street, and that's it, no contact. And left me on no contact. I didn't had opportunity to find them. Yes.
All right, well, Munanda Chaitanya Prabhu, thank you for a nice presentation. Now, I met you in Russia in 95, but I think you're from one of the Baltic states originally?
Yeah, that was the common area, Soviet Union, USSR. So I'm from Baltics. I'm Lithuanian myself, originally.
All right, so your early experiences happened in Lithuania, not in the Russian part.
What is your question?
I'm saying that your early experience that you're talking about, meeting the devotees and learning to chant, that was in Lithuania, not in Russia, per se.
Yeah, it was Soviet Union, so it was not considering like different parts of Soviet Union. It was like a common area. But yes, I'm originally from Baltics, and this was not in the capital, but in another town where I was still studying in the school. Yes, this was Lithuania.
Do you have a younger brother that's the temple president of San Diego? No, I'm just teasing. Very strong resemblance between...
Sometimes devotees confused. They say, oh, you are Rohini Sutta, you are Dravida. You know, they are bowing down in front of me. So I said, sorry, I'm just simple Ananda Chaitanya as I am. Hare Krishna. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna.